Guden, welcome to this podcast discussion on why emerging markets matter. PSG introduces new global fund solutions that is being powered by PSG Wealth. Now, for today, we're going to be unpacking why emerging markets deserve a much closer look from investors. The story is no longer just about higher interest, higher risk rather, and higher volatility. It is increasingly about stronger growth, better demographics, improving fiscal discipline, more attractive valuations, and a wider opportunity set for active managers. My name is Bill Gavaza of The Business Day, and for today, I'm going to be your host for what looks to be a great conversation around emerging markets. And helping us to unpack things, we have Adrian Pask. He is the Chief Investment Officer over at PSG Wealth. Adrian, always good to talk to you.
Hi, Madiwa. It's good to be on the podcast again.
So maybe where we can begin, Adrian, is just understanding what's going on in the PSG Wealth universe. You've launched a couple of new fund solutions. Why should investors be paying much more attention to emerging markets right now?
Yeah, so I think emerging markets has been a topic of debate for us for quite some time. And we were really waiting for a good opportunity to take advantage of really two things. We see risks start to escalate in some of the more conventional loved areas around the world. And then at the same time, we see opportunities starting to become more attractive in other environments. And what we typically do find is that emerging markets are underrepresented in many of the traditional offerings that are available to investors in South Africa. And we wanted to proactively address that by launching a solution. So, I mean, for us, we think emerging markets are expected to generate, you know, almost two-thirds of the incremental economic growth over the next 5 years. So that's going to be the area where there's economic activity. It will be conducive to profit growth in those environments. And obviously, the research that we have is supported by what we see from the IMF, et cetera. I mean, to put that into context, emerging market growth is running at around 8% per annum, where for developed markets, it's struggling to stay at that 3.5% level. And China, India alone are expected to contribute almost half of global growth. And this has lots to do with things like younger populations in these areas, urbanization, et cetera. And obviously, you're growing off a lower base, and these economies are emerging economies. So they're going from less development to more development. And in that transition, there's a lot of economic activity, and there's many businesses that can benefit in those environments from that economic activity.
Maybe a good question is to just understand some of the time horizons. One of the key themes that you and I have spoken about on a number of occasions over the years is this issue around, you know, short-term versus medium-term versus long-term. What are the main drivers behind the long-term emerging market story in your view? You've already highlighted India, China, and the like, but when it comes to that complete and total picture, what are some of those structural drivers?
Yeah, I think, I mean, so often when you and I have discussions, we talk about things that are more cyclical in nature, whether interest rates are going up or down, inflation up or down, or which markets are expensive versus inexpensive at the moment. And those things often incur in cycles. But, you know, there's also the macro backdrop that matters a lot. And some of it can be quite cyclical as well. But when we talk about, you know, structural things, this is the things that will move in a direction as it develops. So a good example in the emerging market space, for example, is urbanization. So this is not something that, you know, moves in cycles, 5 years up, 5 years down. This is an emerging market that is developing as a country. It's attracting higher percentages of its population into urban environments. That means there's a wealth effect of a greater percentage of the population needing things like education, spending money on consumer goods, etc. And that development is a growth story that is in a very long-term perspective. quite linear in nature. So it gradually moves forward over. So you've got this underpinning of a structural tailwind behind these emerging markets. The only question that you then need to address is, well, if you've got this structural underpinning, that's great, but why emerging markets right now? What do we think is going to potentially unlock that? And why is it beneficial for people to look at that now? And as I said, for us, we're starting to see risks emerging in some of the other more loved areas from the previous cycle. And some of these emerging markets have been unloved areas, but the corporates have continued. They're making profits, they're recording earnings growth, and investors are starting to pay attention because people are looking around for alternatives away from the conventional that they have used over the preceding cycle, which has been very much focused on developed markets and more specifically on the US.
Now, Adrian, when we think about emerging markets and what you just said now about the fact that investment activity has tended to be concentrated towards the more developed markets, we do need to be cognizant of the fact that, you know, in many investors' view, that's not a mistake. There has tended to be a view around emerging markets. And in many cases, it's a question around the macro and it's a question around the fiscal, because there are instances, you know, where some of that instability has perhaps, you know, spooked, you know, certain investors, or just that view or that sentiment has worked against that. But like you said, there are lots of people, corporates and the like, that are finding opportunities, that are making profits. How has the macro and fiscal picture changed between emerging and developed markets, in your view, to an extent that we have started to see more of that money going towards the emerging market set?
Yeah, I think the macro picture has actually evolved quite a lot, maybe particularly so over the last 30 to 40 years. If you think back to the early 90s, I mean, South Africa had very high interest rates at the time. We had the Asian crisis at the time. Russia was going through its own set of problems. So there were multiple things in emerging markets that just weren't great. And a lot of it driven by some poor, you know, fiscal frameworks, monetary policy frameworks, debt levels, currency management, all that stuff. And I think what's happened over the last three decades in particular has been just reform and proper thinking around how we could build resilience into the emerging market space, how these countries can become more sophisticated from a fiscal and monetary policy perspective for their own good so that they can stand on their own two feet. And I mean, what we've seen now is at the same time, a somewhat, you know, backwards move in many of the developed markets. I mean, if you look at a country like the US, you know, it's the world's biggest economy, is a lot going for it. But at the same time, if you look at the fiscal situation, and a lot of writing has been done about this over the last 12 to 18 months in particular, but people often forget that, you know, the US has essentially run a budget deficit for more than 20 years. They routinely overspending and under collecting from a tax perspective. It's just not sustainable, because remember, every year that you overspend and under earn, just like any consumer, that means you're running into debt somewhere. And that debt is currently just compounding and compounding. And every time there's a crisis, like a global financial crisis or a COVID crisis, then they introduce even more liquidity and the debt balloons even further. And eventually you run into a problem where you just spend too much money on just financing your own debt. And that sort of curtails investment away from other productive areas like infrastructure, things for growth. So I think that's the problem, where in emerging markets, we seem to have on aggregate better fiscal balance. And, you know, emerging markets can't afford to run into primary deficits for 20 years. They need to adopt prudent policy. Otherwise, markets will just penalize them. And it seems like, you know, other areas like the US in particular sort of gone away with it. and not being punished until now. More recently, we see bond yields going up, etc. But I think if you look at overall debt levels for developed markets, are running for most of them above 100% to GDP. Where if you look at emerging markets, on average, they're below the average for OECD countries. So you can see that the debt levels are, they're not great by any stretch, but there's very few countries that have good looking debt levels at the moment. But they are definitely less restrictive than what they are in the US case, for example. And that means it frees up money to spend on infrastructure and these kind of projects into the economy, which is very beneficial. So you've got a mix of better currency management, a better handle on inflation in general, good growth rates, urbanizations in your favor, investing for growth. So there's just so many positives to take out of it. And at the same time, you know, they aren't these emerging markets from 30 years back that had very cyclical growth rates and earnings growth, because most of the businesses used to be commodity companies. I mean, emerging markets, people tend to think that they're quite synonymous with commodity economies. South Africa might still be in that case, but I mean, we've built our banks, etc. But if you look at businesses or countries like, you know, China, South Korea, India, Taiwan, these countries and stock markets aren't driven by commodity businesses anymore, which I think also gives some comfort that the earnings will be less cyclical, better quality earnings coming through.
With everything that's happening then, the people in financial markets, people that are looking at this space, people that are considering where they can put their money, people that are acknowledging this improved macro picture and some of the attractive returns that can actually be garnered from making such investments. Do you think emerging markets are still attractively valued necessarily, you know, given everything that we're talking about?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's a question we get quite often, because emerging markets did so well last year. So, I mean, emerging markets were up generally, you know, around 40% for last year. And then people think, you know, have we missed the boat? Is it too late? But I think it's important to understand the dynamics between earnings and stock prices, especially over the last 3 years, and what has developed in that space. And most importantly, what has happened year to date, because I do think there's an attractive entry opportunity, is, you know, in 2025, emerging market stocks started to become more expensive. Prices went up, but earnings didn't come through as yet. But essentially, investors were thinking earnings will come through in this environment. In 2026, what we've seen is the earnings did arrive and the stocks did start to become a bit more attractive. So price over the profitability, the earnings. So investors were right in 2025 to expect earnings growth to come through, because it did come through in 2026. But what makes it now very interesting is, given the geopolitical tensions that we've seen this year, emerging markets haven't rallied further. In fact, they've gotten cheaper. So you've got this very interesting dynamic in 2026, where emerging market stocks are getting cheaper and earnings are growing faster. So for investors who are patient, you know, this could be a very attractive opportunity. So, but also, I mean, it's not to say that, you know, emerging markets are completely without risk. I mean, you know, all investments of equity nature come with risks. And I think it's important that you, when you access this opportunity, you do it in the right way. And we certainly think the space is most best suited for active management style.
And when it comes to that active management style, why is active management better than passive exposure in emerging markets, in your view?
Yeah, so I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, we've now mentioned we've built this new portfolio, solution portfolio, consisting of multiple emerging market fund experts. So we diversify across managers, which I think is important in the emerging market space. But to be honest with you, when we set out on this exercise, we actually thought we'd find many of our local providers doing quite well in the space. Many of them do have emerging market offerings. And the theory goes, well, you know, these managers are used to things like volatile currencies. They're used to higher levels of inflation and interest rates. But funny enough, what we did see is if you start to cast your net broader globally, there are well-established businesses globally that focus and specialize in emerging markets, and you have actually outperformed many of our local offerings available. So we think it's a great way to do it. But we weren't close to the idea of potentially looking at passives, and we did consider it. But in this space, what you do learn through the research is if you look at, you know, things like Russia, for example, when we saw the tensions with Ukraine and then the sanctions, I mean, at the time, it was 4% roughly of the emerging market index that just went essentially to zero because of the sanctions, where there's no active manager that can step in and say, oh dear, I can see there's tensions escalating with Russia and the US, probably a better idea to, you know, get some hedging in place or sell or whatever you need to do, as opposed to just passively sitting there and watching the value erode. And there's similar, especially in emerging markets, it's important to have eyes and hands on it, because if you think of what's happening in the South Korean market at the moment, you know, I know you like the tech stocks as well, but if you Samsung and SK Hynix, essentially for semiconductor exposure, is a significant portion of that market. The stocks aren't necessarily extremely expensive, but what's happened is there's a lot of retail leverage into the system. So essentially, people that use leverage to access those areas. And this is why we've seen those two stocks and the Korean index as a whole be quite volatile over the short period. And this is where you actually need someone to say, well, how can I manage the volatility? What level of exposure is really appropriate? You know, is it worth it for me relative to what I can access in Taiwan, India, China, or South Africa? Without that decision making, it just feels like you're really leaving quite a lot on the table. So I think you get a lot of good value for money in terms of paying an active manager to manage those risks and find the right opportunities.
You know, maybe just as a quick follow-up, Adrian, I'm just thinking that the comment that you're making, the argument you're making around being actively managed in this space sort of brings together a lot of the themes that you and I have spoken about over the years, things around psychology, things around having a long-term mindset, things about being able to weather some of those short-term shocks as they happen in the market, things around making sure that people are well-researched, people actually engage experts in a particular area just so that they have the best advice. And also at the same time, also just understanding that there is a lot of opportunity outside of, you know, the more developed markets.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely right. I think it's just a question of, you know, we're not opposed to investing globally outside of emerging markets either. I think there's still a lot of opportunity. But at the same time, we know that this is an area that's often overlooked. And we also know that this is an area that can add a lot of value to a client's portfolio and can't just go ignored.
All right. On that valuable note, that's where we come to the end of today's discussion, just discussing why emerging markets matter as PSG Wealth introduces new global fund solutions around that particular space. We got into discussions around why investors should be paying attention to emerging markets at the moment and some of the structural drivers behind the long-term emerging market story. Adrian has given us a sense of what's happening in all those various spaces, especially when you look at some of the big emerging economies such as China, such as India, and the opportunities that come from there. Also, at the same time, when you look, what's happening in the developed markets, still a lot of opportunity. But does say that many investors would be leaving money on the table if they weren't, you know, at least exploring what's happening in emerging markets. Also getting a sense of if emerging markets are still attractively valued because they did do well over the years. He pointed to last year in particular, but he does, you know, still feel that there is a case to be made. And then at the end, just getting a sense of why active management is probably the best way to approach investments in those particular markets, because you can't take a one approach to how investments are done. Some things can be done a little bit more passively, but when it comes to specifically emerging markets, he encourages an active posture, actually understanding what's happening, engaging with the markets, engaging with experts so that people can get the best returns. So that brings us to the end of the session around why emerging markets matter, brought to you by PSG Wealth. I've been your host, Mulio Gavaza of The Business Day, and joining me was Adrian Pascu, is the Chief Investment Officer over at PSG Wealth.
Thanks, Madiwa. I appreciate it.